Denda Mjonga Kandemiri. The African Union wraps up its 25th summit with renewed commitment to uplifting women.
Transport Minister opens to government plans to expand tolls from highways to the city.
Youths in Zimbabwe and around Africa remember the day in 1976 when more than 100 South African students lost their lives fighting for a better education.
Ourselves to abolish all ills based on cultural and religious practices, including early child marriages and gender-based violence.
The African Union's 25th Extraordinary Summit ended in Johannesburg, South Africa, Monday, with commitment to uplifting women's uplifting women. VOA is Ndimi Yake Mwakalele has more details.
I now declare our meeting closed.
And with those words, President Robert Mugabe, also the rotating chair of the African Union, brought the meeting of more than 50 heads of state and government to a close. Almost overshadowed by events, including the attempted efforts to enforce the controversial indictment of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir by the International Criminal Court, was the theme of this year's gathering, Women, which President Mugabe reaffirmed.
We are now in pursuit of the objectives of our theme for this year, Year of Women Empowerment and Development Towards Agenda 2063.
Agenda 2063 is a long-term goal of the African Union committed to at its 50th anniversary in 2013 to build and develop a prosperous and united Africa. The agenda promises to fully involve and engage women and youth to, quote, rekindle the spirit of working together toward collective prosperity, common destiny under a united and strong Africa, end quote. President Mugabe declared the continental body is still committed to that vision.
We resolved and committed ourselves to abolish all ills based on cultural and religious practices, including early child marriages and gender-based violence.
The push for women's empowerment has been gaining momentum over the years in light of the hardships women continue to face as they're subjected to violence, deprived of education and other economically empowering opportunities. Actress and humanitarian Angelina Jolie offered an impassioned appeal to the leaders gathering in South Africa to uphold their commitment.
Please think what it would mean if the 54 nations of the African Union press as one towards full rights and opportunities for women, not just for this great continent, but for the world.
Africa's only female leader, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia, too appealed for commitment in areas that really matter for women.
Access to land. In too many of our countries, women don't have because sometimes they have to get their husband's permission. Sometimes there are no land laws that would allow women to own land. Most times land is what they use for collateral to get finances from the bank. So the lack of land means the lack of access to finances. So that's a big handicap.
Speaking for the most vulnerable of women, particularly those from war-torn nations, the chair of the African Union Commission, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, also issued an appeal.
Our resolve to silence the guns must therefore give hope to women and children suffering from the terror of Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab. Our resolve must provide renewed hope to the peoples in conflict-ridden areas.
Despite the commitment to empowering women, women's rights activists continue to raise alarm over increasing violence against women and children. For Studio 7 in Washington, this is Ndimi Yake Mwakalele.
Reacting to the commitment by African leaders to empower women, African Union Goodwill Ambassador Nyaradze Gumbonjanda says the move is welcome but challenged the leaders to implement the commitments in their own countries. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye speaks to Ms. Gumbonjanda on the issue.
I really welcome the decision because in the last 1 year and so we've been working so hard in my role as the African Union Goodwill Ambassador for the campaign to end child marriage, and also within my everyday experience in the YWCA where we live with these girls in our communities. So this is a real, real welcome decision by the African Union. However, for us to realize that practical action has to be taken in each country and in each community, it's not enough to make a decision if the decision is not accompanied by resources, by a robust plan of action, and a monitoring plan so that we can track and that the girls are actually being supported.
Looking at the case of Zimbabwe, what's your take on what is going on, especially in the empowerment of women and women holding influential positions?
I think it is unfortunate that we have that contradiction about between what is said and what is the practice. We have the Zimbabwean constitution, which really speaks to the issue of gender equality and parity in decision making. So my expectation would be, for instance, that the expectation I had was that within the presidency, we would also continue to have the representation of women. However, that being the case, we also look forward to 2018 and continue to encourage political parties for women to participate within the various political parties and also for women to have equal opportunities.
That was African Union Goodwill Ambassador to End Early Child Marriages, Nyaradzai Gumbonjanda, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye from South Africa.
Africa, unite, cause we're moving right out of Babylon.
Transport Minister Obet Mpofu says talk to begin implementing toll gates in the country's urban areas is at an advanced stage despite an outcry from motorists and residents. Mpofu says he will not back down on the plans as the tolls will decongest the city centers and generate money for infrastructure. He tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga many countries are looking at Zimbabwe as a model for tolls.
We thought those that want to enjoy those facilities should contribute towards the development of the facility. We are informed by the experiences elsewhere where this initiative has been implemented, and we are not going back on it.
Motorists also argue they are struggling to make ends meet, and the government should first fix the economy before introducing such programs.
Why should we be asking each other questions when, in fact, this is meant for public benefit, not for ministry benefit, not for Mpofu's benefit, but for the national benefit? That's how developed countries have succeeded in providing infrastructure of that magnitude.
How much has the government realized so far from the current highway tollgate program? Is it successful?
It's very successful, but not much has been realized because we don't have many tollgates yet. And that's a program that has received a lot of support and appreciation from the region, even from the continental organizations. Right now, we've got a big Malawian delegation that is studying our situation. Just a few days ago, we had a Ghanaian delegation, we had a Zambian delegation to study our situation. Because it's simple, it's not sophisticated, it's straightforward, and it's transparent. Of course, we have to contend with the views of the public, which views we continue to try and share with either in Parliament or even through consultative meetings with local authorities and all the stakeholders.
That was Transport Minister Obet Mpofu on the line from Harare. A former Pumula legislator and member of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Transport and Infrastructure, Albert Mhlanga, says there's need for more consultation before installing the toll gates.
I'm surprised this government is more interested in actually building more toll gates than building roads. Because I assure you, at the end of a year or two, you hear the minister again announcing that the toll fee is now $5. It will be better you leave your car, maybe board a bus, even if you are an executive, even if you are a manager of a company, is to make us walk or cycle to town, to work, to everywhere. They are actually busy making sure that every Zimbabwean is getting poorer and poorer every day.
What were your observations from the current toll gates? Were roads rehabilitated as a result?
It is not sure to conclude that they've used that money. Remember, the money which we used to build a planting tarry road is the money which we borrowed and we haven't paid. And I can see now the NARA and the local authorities are fighting to share that money or to get any share of that money than the money they are using to purchase vehicles and purchase houses for their staff.
But the minister says there is transparency and the progress of this program is usually brought to parliament for discussion.
We've actually called them for hearing. We failed to actually get those transparent. There are a lot of cases involved in the fraud of that Zinara fund. You remember there is a problem where some creditors for the rural areas. I don't know when a full minister says it's transparent when there was no going to tender, when all those creditors were bought without going to a proper tender. Transparency, they mean transparency to him, not to us as citizens of Zimbabwe.
That was Albert Mhlanga, a former legislator for Pumula and member of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Transport and Infrastructure. He spoke with Studio Sovereign's Thandekile Mhlanga from Bulawayo.
The vendors group Queen of Grace Zimu Asset Trust failed to remove vendors from the Central Business District as it had planned, but says it managed to carry out its cleanup campaign in the Gulf Market area of Harare. The Minister of Small to Medium Enterprises, Thembiso Nyoni, later addressed the ZANU-PF linked group at the main post office. The group's director, Ephraim Chizola, told Studio 7 today's campaign was a success.
We mobilized 15,000 small to medium enterprises who participated successfully to the hosting of this event.
But there were reports that your association was forcing people to join. Is that true?
They are myopic-minded people who doesn't have a brain that is as big as a mouse. I dismiss those allegations in total, but I don't have time really for dismissing them. Because I don't want people to push me to their myopic-mindedness so that they beat me with experience.
Recently, there was a report in the Sunday Mail that also put your trust or your association together with other associations that it said were abusing the name of the First Lady, Dr. Grace Mugabe. May you clarify?
We know that some of Western distractors who try by all means to try and pull a string or a shot against the First Lady. And would want to urge the world to please stop it and please stop taking the First Lady into any unnecessary issues. If there's issues with us, let them come to us. We have never talked about the First Lady in our program. She's quite too busy to be involved in some of these skirmishes of non-thinkers.
That was Queen of Grace Zimu Asset Trust Director Ephraim Chizola speaking with us from Harare. But National Vendors Union Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai says the Queen of Grace Zimu Asset Trust forced the vendors to join the campaign and buy the trust's membership cards.
Let me take this opportunity to make it very clear that this was not a project by vendors. This was a project by politicians who are trying to take advantage of vendors to further their political agenda, to rebuild their tattered political position. Nothing was done to advance the cause of the vendors. We saw members of the ruling party, ZANU-PF, taking the lead in this cleanup campaign. But as National Vendors Union, our position has always been very clear that we don't engage in political activities. We engage in vending activities.
We also understand that vendors were made to purchase membership cards. Is this true?
What happened today is that an organization called the Queen of Grace took advantage of the so-called cleanup campaign to start to sell cards to vendors and mislead vendors to think that these cards are going to assist them to get spaces to operate from within the CBD area of Harare. But the truth of the matter is that these are space barons. Space barons are people who just come and claim to own a certain space and then start to force people to pay certain fees to their own benefit.
That was National Offenders Union Zimbabwe Director Samuel Wadzai in Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
residents of Bulawayo wallow in despair amid company closures that have left them jobless and destitute.
Also, today is the Day of the African Child. Do you know what that day means? Stay tuned to be informed.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says more than 40 new intercontinental ballistic missiles will be added to the country's nuclear arsenal this year.
An Al-Qaeda-linked group in Libya released a list Tuesday with names of those it says died in a U.S. airstrike, but did not include Mokhtar Belmokhtar, the main target of the bombing. Ansar al-Sharia's statement denied that anyone else was killed.
Life in Zimbabwe's second city of Bulawayo has become unbearable for many residents who are now out of work due to company closures. As our correspondent Taura Ishaba reports, the once industrial hub is no more.
For several years, 51-year-old Simeon Piri worked for one of the state-owned companies in Bulawayo. Piri says when an opportunity came, at a time when the cold storage company was struggling, he decided to get a severance package, part of which he used to start an informal business, buying and selling clothes. But Piri says his family is living from hand to mouth because of the current economic hardships, which have pushed a lot of people into the informal job market.
I got retrenched and got a few dollars so that I would start something on my own. I tried to get into informal sector. I opened a flea market. But honestly, every day as it goes by, things are getting tougher. There are no longer any returns in the business because everyone now is now involved into selling of clothes. It's a real struggle because you can go for a week or so without even any sales. And the moment that you make a sale, you also try to cater for the kids at home and also pay rentals. For the extent that I'm selling of my wares from and also at home. So it's a big challenge for us to survive here in Bulawayo.
32-year-old Trevor Jenner, who used to rely on seasonal jobs on farms in South Africa, is also finding life difficult in the city. Like Piri, he also turned to vending and is making very little money, though he does not think of going back to South Africa to boost his meager income.
In a day, I can make about $4, and during month ends, I make about double that. Things are very tough here in Bulawayo, and what I get is far from what I would like to. Times are very bad. There are no jobs, industries are closed, so there's no way one can get a job.
Even those who are employed, like a National Railways of Zimbabwe worker who only asked to be identified as Swanda, life is equally tough as the parastatal owes employees several months in unpaid wages and salaries. In the pre-independence era and the following few years after independence, Bulawayo used to be Zimbabwe's industrial hub, accounting for about 75% of the country's manufacturing sector. But the country's economic decline in the past decade has seen hundreds of companies shutting down, with official estimates indicating that about 20,000 workers have lost their jobs in the country's second biggest city since 2009. Director Meli Dube of a non-governmental organization, Bulawayo Agenda, says although some companies in Bulawayo have benefited from a government-initiated $40 million Distressed Industries and Marginalized Areas Fund, or DIMAF, a lot more needs to be done in order to resuscitate local industries.
Bulawayo, I think, having been the hub of industry, felt the most of the pain of the economy's misery. It was struck more by the grief of the economy than any other part of the country. in terms of deindustrialization. We know that leaders would respond and say, you know, it's all over the country and so forth. But, you know, it's for leaders to solve problems, not to tell us where else it is.
Edward Manning is the president of the Matabeleland region of the Zimbabwe Chamber of Informal Economy Associations. Manning says, despite the fact that there are already many Zimbabweans earning a living in the informal economy, as a result of dwindling formal employment opportunities, his association is seeing more people, including children of school-going age, joining the informal sector.
For starters, most of our members were retrenched workers caused by company closure and etc. But of late now, we are finding a different trend. Very educated people are now joining us. Graduates, we even got some who come to our office and we are no more surprised. 2 years ago, I was surprised to see a graduate come into our office and ask for assistance of how could he get a trading bay and how can he get a flea market stand, etc. But now it's very normal to see students coming in. And the ages have even dropped. You find in the streets now, there are 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds who are now trading.
Unemployment in the city has also affected journalism graduates who are struggling to make ends meet due to a lack of jobs in the media sector. A journalism and media studies graduate who does not want to be identified says since graduating nearly a year ago, she has been trying to find a job without success. The graduate says she gets by through a bit of freelancing work, which she believes is not yet giving her enough income. She still has to get financial support from her elderly grandmother.
With the little peanuts that I get, I just help out a bit. Not that much, but helping out maybe in just buying bread, those little things, not doing something that would have impact at home. When I'm not getting money, I'm looked after by my granny. And obviously, for somebody who has graduated, you'd think I should be the one who's supposed to be taking care of her. But now, with the economic situation, it's been hard. And with the fact that most media houses are not even employing, it's even harder.
Zimbabwe has a reputation as having one of the highest literacy rates and the most skilled human resources in Africa. But as the economy continues to decline, such facts and figures count for nothing, as most young people are without jobs. In response to a question about what needs to be done in the short and medium term in order for the country to get out of the current hardships, Dwe says the answer partly lies in the country's leaders getting their politics right.
At the center of all the failures and a bit of successes that have been realized in this country, it's what has been done right or wrong politically. So in all honesty, I think we cannot take away the politics from the economy, because we know that the economy is run in a way that benefits those who pay allegiance to certain political figures or political organizations. So at the center of it all is politics. We need to get our politics right, whether in the short term or in the long term. If our politics is not right, we will not get our economics right in Zimbabwe.
Government has often come up with policies that look good on paper, but critics usually point out that a lack of political will in implementing such policies is largely to blame for most of the economic problems that the country is facing. Reporting for Studio 7 from Lawayo, this is Taurai Shaba.
Zimbabwean youth today quietly observed the 24th anniversary of the Day of the African Child, set aside to remember the uprising in Soweto on June 1976. Close to 200 people, including students, were killed on that day in cold blood as they protested against laws compelling them to adopt Afrikaans as a medium of instruction in schools. Maxwell Rafamoyo of the Education Coalition of Zimbabwe tells Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo the day is significant, though there were no formal events marking it.
This is a very important day on the calendar for children, as it marks their need to pursue their rights, as is exposed by what happened in Soweto in 1976. These are children who were fighting for their rights. And this can show you the length to which government, repressive government, can go to destroy the rights of the children. But I think as was exhibited by the children then, they didn't take anything to stop them even death to claim their rights. So to us, this is a very important day which serves as a reminder to lawmakers, to policymakers, to governments, to say children have their rights. We should be exposed in the constitution, in the policy frameworks, in the legal frameworks. And only not only that, exposing them, but to have them in practice, have them in reality, children to enjoy their right to health, their right to education, their right to shelter, their right to any of the rights as opposed by the different, like the UN, RCAC, and also the African Charter.
In Zimbabwe, do you see that 1976 Soweto spirit among the youth to demand, stand up and demand their rights?
I don't think we have that kind of a spirit in Zimbabwe. I think the playing field may not be that even for them to do so. Yes, I know even then in Soweto the playing field was not even. But I think there is no space for children to demand their rights. Yes, we have tried to put in place institutions like the Children's Parliament and so on, and we have spoken of child participation. But I think we still fall far short of having children take their role in demanding their rights.
That was Maxwell Rafemoyo of the Education Coalition of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare. And in our sports segment, Zimbabwean sports fans are celebrating what is probably one of their best weekend. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us why.
Zimbabwe sports teams have given fans something they've not seen lately. The first triumph came from rugby team at Edward School, where the Sables beat Kenya 28-20, but more on that later. Your victory carried over to the Warriors, who arrived in Harare tears from fans who welcomed them as heroes following their unexpected 2-1 win over the Flames of Malawi at the Kamuzu Stadium in Blantyre. Peter Msenda was among the excited fans.
It was long overdue. That win, it was super catapultaneous.
Msenda wants to see the Warriors win the next home game against Guinea at the National Sports Stadium in Harare. But he says it will take preparation.
Ziva should revise their manners because, fine, we won, but that doesn't give them a leeway to sit back and relax.
Soccer analyst Stanley Kasande attributes the Warriors' victory to coach Kalisto Pasua, whom he says has done well since being appointed Warriors coach 9 months ago.
They read too much into the problems that we had. They don't have a Kamabilia. They don't have a knowledge of Sona. They don't have a Willard Katsande. They don't have a Tatenda Makurua.
Not so happy with the Flames' performance, Malawi took it out on coach and fired Jake Jamangwana. Katsande, however, feels this was a mistake, saying the problem is more with the quality of players at Malawi's disposal compared to the Warriors.
Please remain focused. You're doing the right thing. And we will always support you. And I just hope one day a good break will come for him and he should be richly rewarded for this.
Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thanks, Michael. And remember, please, to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk when we are going to be discussing about the youths in Zimbabwe and around Africa, remembering the day in 1976 when more than 100 South African students lost their lives in a day that has been declared the Day of the African Child. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, leaving you with Tandekile Mhlanga Fondebele.